Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Through the Smoke at Radio at Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. This week we have a very special guest. Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner Ed Mann is here to talk to us in a very preliminary sense in regard to the line of duty death of Pennsylvania Fire Instructor and Altoona Fire Captain Robert Gilardi. We're going to be talking with Commissioner Mann about the preliminary facts and what happened. You know, there's been a lot of discussion nationally regarding the recent tragic loss of Robert Gilardi. And firefighter deaths strike us all. They hit us all and they shake us all, but deaths during training shake us even harder. We all remember upstate New York when an assistant chief was charged following the death of a firefighter during training. And in Delaware several years ago, an assistant chief was involved in training. Due to the use of a garden sprayer and spraying a flammable liquid during a training burn, it flashed and killed that instructor and that assistant chief. And we've heard other incidents as well where firefighters have lost their lives in line of duty. We're going to be talking today with Commissioner Mann about this. You know, Gilardi's death on October 25th was the first time anybody lost their life at the Pennsylvania State Fire Academy. While speculation is unavoidable, finding out what happened to his longtime friend and assuring it never happens again has turned into a passion for Ed Mann, our guest today. Bob's death will not be in vain, that's a promise, states Commissioner Mann. Every line of duty death hurts, but this one hurts even more because the commissioner worked with Bob, and he's taking this a little bit more personal. I would say a lot more personal from my standpoint. I know Ed, and I know his passion for firefighter safety and survival. Fire Instructor Gilardi was part of a team teaching instructor trainees on October 23rd, the last day of a five-day training session spread over two weekends. Instructor Gilardi went to the basement of the burn building where the fire had been set. Something went wrong and he never walked back out. Student instructors found him collapsed on the basement floor with burns, serious burns, to 75% of his body. Tragically, he died 2 days later, leaving a wife and two sons behind. An autopsy failed to show any pre-existing physical problems, and Instructor Gilardi's death was ruled to be caused by the fire. So we'll be back in just a few minutes talking with Commissioner Mann to determine what he can tell us so far, what's been determined so far, and determine what we can learn from what's happened even at this early date. But first, let's take a couple of glances at some other issues that are out here. Last week we covered, and the week before we covered quite a bit of the volunteer issues, and we've been following with interest the Long Island fire volunteer issues by Newsday, the newspaper that attempts to cover Long Island. And while Newsday certainly brought out some significant issues, I mean, when you've got fire commissioners buying themselves fancy cashmere jackets, and when they go away to conventions, they rent each of their own Lincoln Town cars and other waste like that. Something's wrong, and someone needs to fix that. The bigger issue to us, though, is that when fire departments are called by the public, the trucks have to get out on a timely basis with qualified people led by qualified fire officers. It's really that simple. Back to basics. When that's being done, and you're spending millions of dollars on fire stations, fancy trips, fancy coats, the mission has been forgotten. Back when Ben Franklin started all this stuff, the idea was to help neighbors, and that's what the volunteer fire service is supposed to be about. Has your community changed? Has your volunteer fire department changed? And that's a big question. We're going to take that on in a couple of weeks and in some other discussions. But really, it's a simple test. Look at your volunteer fire department. When the tones go out, how long does it take you to get on the road? If it's more than 2 to 3 minutes, you're missing the mission. What are the quality of the people on the apparatus? Are they active members participating in training and trained in the latest skills that your department's expected to provide? If not, you're missing the mission. How long does it take you to get out, and what is your staffing? What's the quality of service? Real basic stuff. So we'll be watching with interest to see what changes are made. But you know what's happened is so many others, including the newspaper, are broad-brushing the fire service. I think in this situation in Long Island and many other areas, they need to look at each community. By saying the Long Island Fire Service this or the Long Island Fire Service that is like saying the American Fire Service this or the American Fire Service that. Which fire department are you talking about? Which community are you talking about? And let's determine what level of service they're providing. Again, there's no excuse for multi-million dollar buildings with half-million-dollar apparatus and commissioners and others spending money like it's going out of style when service is not being provided. And that's the bottom line. When people call 911, they want service. So as quick as people are to say, oh, look what's happening on Long Island, we also all need to look at our own homes and our own fire departments to see what level of service we're providing as well, career or volunteer. In another interesting story in Philadelphia, a pot farmer, pot as in marijuana, grass, or whatever you want to call it, has been sentenced to prison for the deaths of Philadelphia firefighters. Daniel Bro, who's a Port Richmond, Philadelphia area handyman, whose basement pot farm smoldered into flames, trapping and killing two firefighters last year, was sentenced this week to 15 months to 4 years in prison. Gasps and sighs were heard in the Common Pleas Court, which was packed with firefighters, police, and relatives of the victims and the defendant, when the judge announced the sentence. The 37-year-old pot farmer, who was found guilty November 21st of 2 counts of involuntary manslaughter, causing a catastrophe, and drug charges, could have been sent to prison for more than a decade. That's unfortunate. In our opinion, he should have been sent to prison for much more than a decade. According to the judge, he says, there's nothing I can do to make the loss go away. The loss is devastating. Captain John Taylor, 53 years old, of Philly, and firefighter Ray Rubio, 42, of Philly, both lost their lives in Bro's burning smoke-clogged basement the night of August 20, 2004. At trial, the prosecution contended that the fire was caused by the intense heat produced by the 1,000-watt lamps Bro used to grow marijuana in a small plywood closet. According to testimony, Rubio became disoriented as his air supply ran low and became entangled in the dark welter of Bro's basement. Taylor sought to rescue him. Both men perished. Rubio was later found pinned beneath debris at the foot of the basement stairs. Taylor lay nearby. And that captain stood by his firefighter the entire time. You talk about you go, we go. Captain John Taylor in Philadelphia set that tone for all of us. Now, the defendant, Bro, told the court and the fire and the deaths were a nightmare, and he's truly sorry. You know, we need to remind people like this that, yeah, it's a nightmare because you screwed up, but what about the nightmare to the families of firefighter Rubio and Captain Taylor? They'll never return home, and that loss is tragic. This needs to be served as a reminder to the other pot farmers and the other drug dealers that are doing stuff out here that's causing hazards, additional hazards, to an already dangerous job that we have as firefighters. Judges need to slam these doors shut and lock these drug addicts, drug farmers, and whatever else they are out there, causing more hazards to us, in jail as long as they can. Sure, you can't bring them back, but when other pot farmers and other drug dealers understand that they're not going to be taken lightly, then maybe people will stop acting in the stupid manner they do and stop creating additional hazards for firefighters. The job is dangerous enough. People need to wake up. A tragic line-of-duty death this week in Calera, Alabama. A firefighter was killed on Monday in a crash involving the apparatus he was in. This firefighter, responding to an incident, crashed into an 18-wheeler truck. It happened on Monday morning of this past week on County Road in Shelby County, Alabama, near Interstate 65. This firefighter in his apparatus was flying an ambulance to help with a medical call at the time of the crash. His own brother and sister firefighters responded to the scene. The 25-year-old firefighter was taken by helicopter where he died of his injuries. Tragically also that this firefighter is the grandson of that town's mayor. We need to think when we're responding. Every one of us raise a hand and know we're guilty of flying through traffic, racing through red lights, operating without seat belts, and just focused on getting to the call without thinking of the repercussions that can happen if we're not careful getting there. But with all these events that are happening weekly, we need to wake up and realize we got to be careful. We got to slow down. If the red light is on, stop. If it's a stop sign, stop. If your members aren't buckled up, don't respond. We could eliminate a number of significant line-of-duty deaths by a few basic procedures being followed and respected, and especially enforced by strong fire officers who aren't afraid to be the boss. And lastly, it's Christmas time. The holiday season's coming up. Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, whatever you celebrate, You're going to be getting online looking to give out gifts and purchase things for your friends. Well, think real hard when you get online and you see things such as an FDNY Halligan tool stolen from 9/11 being offered on eBay. Think about if you get online and you see, wow, it's an FDNY bunker code, or look, a Los Angeles fire helmet. Think that it may be stolen. It may be stolen from firefighters that work as hard as you do to buy those tools. Just this week, a firefighting tool that disappeared from a Bronx truck company at Ground Zero on September 11th was spotted on eBay. Captain Joe Principio, Captain Joe Principio, a ladder 58, saw the pry bar called a Halligan tool, which we know it as, being auctioned, and he noticed that it had a 58 welded on it. He notified his fire marshals, who contacted the seller, who happened to be a volunteer firefighter in Florida, and wanted a minimum bid of $1,000. But, of course, he knew nothing of how the tool got to him. That's a shame. We're selling each other out in this type of stuff. $1,000 for a Halligan? Shoot. I'll give you a Halligan tool for $200, and I'll put any lettering you want on it. It's a piece of cake to get this kind of stuff. But a little respect for each other, and especially respect for the dead brothers who lost their lives in 9/11, when you start taking tools like this and selling them, you're just as guilty as anybody else. So think about that. We're going to be back in a few minutes talking to Fire Commissioner Ed Mann from Pennsylvania regarding the tragic line-of-duty death of Robert Gilardi, a fire instructor.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're back with Through the Smoke Radio at Firehouse.com. We have a special guest with us this week. It's Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner Ed Mann. Ed was reappointed as the State Fire Commissioner by Governor Rendell in November of 2000. Commissioner Mann was appointed as the fourth State Fire Commissioner in the Commonwealth by Governor Tom Ridge in July of 2000. So he's been around since 2000. Ed has an extensive background in emergency service, having started with the Logan and Undine Fire Companies in Bellefonte, Center County, Pennsylvania, nearly 30 years ago. He officially became a member of the fire companies in 1977 and has functioned both as a firefighter and an EMT. Ed served with the U.S. Air Force as a fire protection specialist. After his retirement from the service, he worked for Senators J. Doyle Corman and Jake Corman as an executive assistant in the 34th Senatorial District in Pennsylvania. Commissioner Mann has worked as a local level and adjunct instructor since 1987 and is currently certified as an airport firefighter, Fire Inspector 2, Fire Instructor 3, Fire Investigator 2, and Fire Officer 3 through the International Fire Service Accreditation Congress. In addition to being the full-time Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner, he is currently the Assistant Chief for the East Dairy Fire Company in Mifflin County. He is a current member of the NFPA, the Fire Service Section of the IAFC, and he serves also on the Board of Directors of the IAFC VCOS Section. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you, Billy.
We appreciate you being here today, and I know this is a difficult subject for you, but the fact that you're willing to share what you can with the brothers and sisters out there listening today is a big deal. A little bit of a background. 75 fire companies accompanied the body of Captain Robert Gilardi on a long, slow ride to a cemetery in New Germany outside of Altoona, Pennsylvania. His funeral mass had ended at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, Altoona, with well over 1,000 people in attendance. Robert Gilardi was remembered as a dedicated and loyal firefighter who died teaching others to fight fires. He taught through example how to care about the things that are most important, said Jim Glasson, president of the IFC Local 2, I'm sorry, president of the IFF Local 299. I want to make a correction to something I stated earlier, that Captain Gilardi, or Instructor Gilardi, leaves behind a wife, Vicky, and three sons, Kyle, Drew, and Derek. He was proud of everything his boys were doing. His legacy to us was how to be a great husband and father, Glasson said during the two-hour funeral. Gilardi, 47 years old, a 21-year member of the Summerhill Volunteer Fire Company, and a fire officer with the Altoona Fire Department for more than a decade, died last month of burns he received after collapsing during instruction at the State Fire Academy in Lewistown. Altoona Fire Chief Rennie Santone recalled his co-worker's love for Lionel trains and his constant lobbying to get the chief to sell him some of his finest models. Obviously, a good relationship existed between the captain and his boss. Firefighters from across the Northeast, along with hundreds of friends and family, crowded the cathedral's huge sanctuary. The standing-room-only press of people was so great that many firefighters from New York and Baltimore and outside the East Coast were forced to listen outside. Johnstown Fire Chief Tony Kovacek and six other department members were amongst those attending the mass, and more than a dozen of the Flood City's firefighters manned the stations spread throughout Altoona so Gilardi's co-workers could attend. So there's an example of how we take care of each other. Johnstown covered Altoona, and certainly Altoona would do the same for other departments. This was a well-known, well-loved fire instructor. He was known for his smile, his dedication, his being an intense student of the fire service, a big fire buff, into the job, but he lost his life doing what he absolutely loved best, and that's teaching others how to do the job. So we're going to spend a few minutes now and talk with Commissioner Mann, who directly, for a little bit of background, Ed, you, as the Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner, you supervise the State Fire Academy as well. Does that fall under your command as well?
That's correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your job is, what other responsibilities you have as the Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner?
Well, I have a full-time staff of 23 people. We're responsible for the administration of the Volunteer Loan Assistance Program, where we administer anywhere from $1.5 to $2 million of low-interest loans each month to volunteer fire and ambulance services. The responsibility for the Fire Academy for the delivery of local-level fire training, which involves some 1,200 local-level instructors. And then we also have 80 adjunct instructors that work suppression programs and 60 adjunct instructors that work homeland security training programs for us.
Well, that's a lot on your plate, and I know you've probably got about 30 or 40 executive assistants, right?
No.
Things are tight. Well, tell us about the Academy. Let's start drawing a picture for our listeners about the Academy and the programs, and then we'll move into talking about this week. So describe to us the Pennsylvania State Fire Academy.
The State Fire Academy is located in Lewistown, Pennsylvania, near the center of the state. The brick-and-mortar structures were actually built in about 1955 with the primary administration building. And the way it came about was that back in the 30s, 40s, and the 50s, they used to have an annual fire school that was held at Penn State University, which is only about 30 miles from here.
Okay.
And at some point along the way, the relationship broke off with Penn State University, and it moved here to the Lewistown area, and they used to have all of the training at the various high schools in and around Lewistown. And at some point in the late 40s, early 50s, the Lewistown Fire Departments and a group of people came up with this parcel of land where the buildings are located, and the rest is history, as they say.
What type of buildings do you have there? Obviously, you've got a training, a classroom area. I've personally been there. I know you've got a very nice apparatus. It's a well-equipped academy. But as far as the buildings themselves, what do you offer?
Well, we have a 2.5-story residential burn building, a 4-story mid-rise building. In the late 90s, when there were renovations made here, the old burn buildings, the old high-rise building and the old residential building, they were all kept and gutted, so to speak, and they're also used for collapse training, rope training, high-angle training, and whatnot.
Okay. What other props do you have? Do you have propane?
We have a propane prop. We have a train car on site. We have a flammable combustible liquid pit, and that's pretty much what we have in the way of props.
Okay. Now, as far as full-time folks that are dedicated strictly to instruction and providing training, how many of those folks exist?
Well, I have When I'm at full complement, I have two full-time resident instructors. And they're supplement, and that's why we have the 80 adjunct instructors. Obviously, we'd never be able to pull our programs off if we only had two instructors to deal with the programs. Our programs, we run anywhere from, say, a weekend specialty program on SCBA maintenance to two-week-long hazardous material technician programs and everything in between.
Okay. So the two full-time folks, are there other full-time specialists as well?
Well, I have other full-time staff here, but as far as the being involved in a direct delivery of training at the academy, I only have the two full-time resident instructors.
Okay. Now let's start talking more specifically. The course that these students, first of all, how many students were involved? Tell us about the students, how long this class had been going on, what the structure was as far as instructor-to-student ratio. I know this was a program, a certification class to train fire instructors. Is that correct, Commissioner?
Right. Several years ago, we changed our instructor directives, and there are basically three types of local-level fire training instructors. We have instructor emeritus, suppression instructors, and non-suppression instructors. And the requirements to become an instructor in Pennsylvania are pretty stringent. And in order for an individual to become a suppression instructor, this 5-day instructor development program that they were in is the last hurdle, if you will, the last requirement that they have to fulfill before they'll be appointed as a suppression instructor.
Okay, so they're in classroom and hands-on?
Right, it's classroom and hands-on. It's a 5-day program. This particular program, they had split it up over 2 weeks. So the students, because a lot of these students are also volunteer firefighters, it's difficult for them to be able to take an entire week off.
Right.
So we split it up, and they were on the last day of the 5-day program.
Okay, so the students are all veteran firefighters with plenty of time on a job because now they're getting certified and trained as instructors.
That's correct.
What certifications do they have to have before they can get into this class?
Well, to even become a local-level instructor, there are so many years of experience that you have to have, whether it be career, volunteer, fire service.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be certified at Firefighter 2. You have to complete an instructor methodology class, which is another 5-day program. Most of these folks come to us, they're certified at Fire Service Instructor 1. So the requirements are pretty stringent.
Okay. How many students did you have in the class?
There were, I believe, 18 in the class.
Okay, and how many instructors? Obviously, in the classroom time, there'd be one or two.
For the practical sessions, we had two groups of instructors. The total would have been 15.
Okay. So how many students?
I believe there were 18 in the class.
Okay, so almost a one-on-one ratio.
Right, and the way the program is set up, especially on the last 2 days, what is done in the program is that one of our adjunct instructors is assigned to work side-by-side with one of the instructor candidates.
Okay.
And each of the instructor candidates has to fulfill the role as the lead instructor, the safety officer, the instructor on a basement fire, an instructor on the fire on the second floor of the building, and they're actually evaluated on their ability to lead the other candidates as an instructor.
Okay.
Very
good. So, I mean, it sounds like the span of control is more than adequate, at least up until this point.
Right.
Okay. We're listening you're listening to Through the Smoke. This is radio at firehouse.com. We're talking with Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner Ed Mann. Commissioner, we're going to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and talk about that morning.
Okay.
Where they started and the events that led up to the tragic event. Stay tuned.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
This is Through the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. We're talking with Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner Ed Mann regarding the tragic line-of-duty death of Robert Gilardi, a Pennsylvania State Fire instructor. All right, Commissioner, well, let's move the calendar to that day when Instructor Gilardi lost his life. Let's talk about the morning, the weather, all the conditions, kind of paint a picture for our listeners so they understand exactly what happened.
Well, it was Sunday, October the 23rd. The class had started probably about 8:30 that morning. Everybody was assigned to their teams. We had two different teams of instructors, and the fire that Bob was injured in would have been the last fire of the day. Bob would have participated in three fires that day in one capacity or the other.
So he had so far had three burns that he was involved in?
Well, that would have been his third fire
okay.
of the day. So
okay.
between the two groups of instructors, you would have had, you know, each instructor would have seen three fires throughout the course of the day. Now, some of those instructors may have been outside assigned to the instructor candidate that was the safety officer. One of the, you know, it may have been assigned to work with the incident commander for this particular, the candidate that would have been playing the role as the incident commander. So
okay.
The instructors rotate around through those various positions.
So this isn't a burn as fire students know it. This is a burn to assess the skills of someone's ability as a fire instructor.
That's correct.
Okay.
Which means the fires are not the typical fires that are set in the burn building.
You're not determining their level of extinguishing a fire. You're
exactly.
determining their level of functioning in the training scenario.
Exactly.
Okay, go ahead.
So on this particular fire, and the weather was nice that day. In fact, I was at the local football field with my kids' football team doing what the president of the football team does. I was emptying the trash cans. At about 12:45, the incident occurred. The State Emergency Operations Center paged me, and I responded to the Fire Academy. But before I go there, this is Bob was assigned to...
Yeah, let's talk about the details now.
Okay.
So they're ready to go into the burn.
Right. So all the teams have been assigned.
Okay, let's talk. What are your different teams?
Okay, you would have had an incident commander.
Right.
Okay, and in that position you would have had one of the instructor candidates.
Okay.
Plus one of the adjunct instructors that stands shoulder to shoulder throughout that program.
To assess their skills.
Right, to assess their skills.
Very good.
And then you had the safety team and a safety officer, and you would have had one of the adjunct instructors assigned there as well.
Safety team is?
We have a RIT team.
Okay, RIT team. Okay.
We have a RIT team.
Okay, and they were
that's
there.
Part of all of our structural burn programs.
Right.
You would have had an arsonist in the basement, an arsonist on the second floor.
Okay, what is
and they
Bob?
Would have,
is Bob?
Bob, would have,
Bob, the
Bob was assigned to set the fire.
Okay.
In the basement.
Go ahead.
All right, the students, so then you had an instructor candidate who was actually leading two other instructor candidates that would have been making entry to extinguish the fire in the basement.
Okay.
They were being observed by one of our full-time employees.
Very good.
Okay. So Bob went down into the basement. His assignment was to set the fire. Now,
let's talk about the basement for a minute.
Okay.
Brick and mortar?
It's brick and mortar.
Lined?
The burn room itself is lined.
Okay.
Our basement is not wide open. You go down, there's an exterior set of steps and an interior set of steps, and there's a room that measures about 12 by 15 with an 8-foot ceiling. Two of the walls are lined with linings, the ceiling's lined with a liner, and the floor's lined with fire brick.
Okay.
Obviously, it's there to protect the building. It's a little difficult to get $2 million every couple of years to renovate your burn buildings.
Right.
The room itself has an entryway without a door. There's no door on the entryway to the burn room itself.
That's from a stairway from upstairs.
Right. So you come down. If you come down the exterior steps,
okay,
into the basement, the burn room would be immediately off to your left.
Okay.
If you come down the interior steps, you're going to crawl from You're going to come down the steps from side D of the building, which would bring you down to side A of the building, and then you got to work your way back to side D to even get near the burn room.
Okay.
The fires are set.
So
in,
from the burn room itself, can a person get out two ways easily,
yeah,
or is one
right.
tougher than the other?
No, you can get out of the basement. If you're outside of the burn room,
okay,
being able to leave the basement is
right.
not difficult.
What if I'm in the burn room?
That's what we're leading to.
Okay.
Okay. When Bob was discovered in the burn room.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I can tell you from having worked in that burn building myself hundreds of times that you go into the burn room, you set the skids on the embers, and you leave. It's not physically possible to stay in the burn room.
Okay.
Which leads us all to believe that something occurred that prevented Bob from leaving the burn room because he was discovered inside the burn room.
So when you say, let me make it real clear for our listeners, when you say burn room, it's really a room that strictly has stuff burning in it. It's not the room that students would necessarily operate in?
That's correct. The students are not permitted to enter any of the rooms that we actually set fire in.
So if you were teaching firefighters to extinguish that fire, they would do it as an indirect hit?
That's correct. You're
okay.
going from the doorway.
Okay, very good. Go ahead. And they know that. No one goes in that room.
Right, and they know that.
Okay, so it's almost like a fireplace.
Exactly.
Okay.
And a lot of people refer, as the day goes on, obviously that room being lined with the liners and
yeah.
whatnot turns into an oven. When you
right.
get down near the end of the day,
right.
the liners and the brick and the cinder block have absorbed an awful lot of the heat.
Right.
So the students, at one point during the evolution, Bob had come back up to the first floor of the burn room.
This is right now, basically, during this final burn.
He had gone into the basement.
Right.
Came back up to the first floor.
Gone into the basement for what? To start the fire. Okay,
or
came back out.
Came back up to the first floor.
Okay.
And ran into a member of the full-time staff.
Okay.
And it was commenting on that he was hot.
Okay.
Which was not unusual.
Right.
And, you come out, you're pulling your turnout gear away from your
How
skin.
Was the weather that day, Bob?
The weather, it was cool. It wasn't, hot or humid.
Okay.
The weather was nice.
Okay.
He come back up to the first floor and commented to one of the full-time staff that he was hot and that he was going to take a couple of minutes to cool down and he was going to go back down into the basement.
Okay.
And that's what he did.
Did you have rehab and EMS on
the
scene?
There was rehab and EMS on the scene, which, again, is part of all of our programs here.
Okay.
And the other instructor had said, why don't you stay out? I can take the students and go down. We can handle this. And Bob said, no, I'm fine. I just need to cool off a little bit.
Okay.
So Bob went back down to the basement.
He's going down by himself.
He was going down to the basement by himself.
Okay.
He went down to the basement to check on the fire or rekindle the fire. And several minutes later, the students...
Well, let's pause for 1 second.
Okay.
Now. This is a good point to pause. So many of the folks listening to this show, and we are very fortunate, thousands upon thousands download this show every week, and we're certainly gratified and honored that so many are interested. But we, in our business, as much as we preach brotherhood and sisterhood, we sometimes don't think. And, so many when this event, how could this happen or how could that happen? But we need to think. I'm thinking about our own operation. We have had many structural burns where our igniter or arsonist, as you call it, goes in by themselves. And right after you had spoken to me the day this occurred, I started thinking, we've all done this. Whether we should or not is irrelevant for this discussion right now, but we all have done that. There but for the grace of God, so to speak. And we need to keep that in mind as we continue listening to this description and the facts from the commissioner.
One of the things I'd like to point out is that it's not a standard practice, if you will, that I guess kind of hard to explain. On many occasions, you would have two people in the building.
Okay.
But there are occasions where, because you're going into a concrete building, You know, the fire only gets as big or as small as you make it. It doesn't leave the room in which you set it. I banned the use of any accelerants 3.5-4 years ago, so we know we don't have a problem with someone throwing combustible liquids around.
So all you're burning is pallets.
Everything is, we're using pallets with some Excelsior, and that's it.
Okay.
Okay.
But I just want our listeners to think, because, you know, oh, that truck drove through the red light. Oh, this guy was going too fast. Oh, this guy was drunk. Oh, this instructor went in by himself. These people are us. We've all done this. The key is, what can we learn from it? And we're getting ready to hear some more from the commissioner. But and Ed, let me jump ahead, and then we'll jump back. But my understanding is you've already made it clear and established policy that now when the igniter goes in, there is a spotter watching every move that igniter makes. Is that correct?
That's correct. Before we have our first burn program, which will be probably in March of 2006, the new policy will be that, the, you know, anybody that's lighting the fire will have an individual outside the burn room watching them ignite the fire.
And really what this does, all this does for the rest of us, is reminds us that in no case, other than if you're the pump operator, should you be operating alone. There's not a single job, maybe hydrant person and maybe pump operator, but no one operating in the danger zone, anybody operating in the hot areas, interior structural firefighting, truck work, engine work, squad work, whatever you're doing, at least you must have a partner. Truly, two of us must always work together no matter what. So this just reiterates to us again, nobody should be operating alone. Go ahead, Commissioner.
So the bottom line is you know, we weren't complacent. We were comfortable,
right,
with a burn building, or with the way things had been done since 1955, and there had been hundreds of instructors that have gone into the burn building. You know, you're going into a controlled environment,
right?
And everything, you work from that scale where everything is in your favor to be able to leave that building with a favorable result.
Right, and your history is that you had.
Right, and so we were comfortable.
Okay.
And as are a lot of other brick-and-mortar training facilities across the United States.
Okay, so Captain Gallardi comes out. I refer to him as Captain out of respect. He was full-time Captain Altoona. He was instructor for your agency. He comes out, speaks to another full-time instructor, shakes his coat. It's hot. Give me a minute. Let me cool off, and we'll get back to work.
Right.
Okay, what happened?
And he went back down to the basement. Several minutes later,
okay,
the full-time staff member and three of the instructor candidates, one was being evaluated.
Okay.
The other two were fulfilling the position as nozzle people with the hand line.
Okay, and then they rotated through that during the day. So
right.
Everyone, okay, so you've got a person being evaluated, and two firefighters, so to speak.
Who are also instructor candidates.
And then you've got a full-time instructor leading that team of three.
Right, and that full-time person's job is to basically evaluate the individual who, the instructor candidate who was leading the attack team.
Okay, so I'm outside, and I'd like you to talk about this later, but you also had several of the students' families watching, observing, which is not unusual in many academies, for them to see. So if I was sitting outside, what would I see coming out of the burn building they're getting ready to go in?
You would see a lot of smoke.
Okay. So it's burning pretty good down there.
Right. It was burning pretty good. The students went down. They extinguished the fire.
Okay. So far, they make their way down. They knock down the fire. They're being evaluated. They see nothing unusual.
They see nothing unusual.
Go ahead.
They start to vent out the basement steps. So they shut the line down. They turn the nozzle to the outside steps, and they begin to ventilate out the exterior steps.
By using hydraulic their nozzle to hydraulic ventilation.
Right, hydraulic ventilation.
Good. So the line's flowing out.
Right.
The room is clearing.
They hear some moaning and some banging around, and they shut the line down and looked in the right-hand front corner of the room,
which was normally not visible to where they were operating.
Exactly.
Okay.
And when they heard the moaning and they heard some banging around, they looked inside the burn room, right inside the right front corner of the burn room, and that's where Captain Gallardi was laying.
Commissioner, did they as they were working their way down, did they expect to see him in a corner? Did they expect to see him leave? Or were they not even thinking about him because they're thinking that we're being evaluated?
But the
if you can tell. I mean, well, I know there's certain things not allowed to discuss.
There'd be a lot of speculation there. I mean, it's not uncommon for the arsonist, the fire setter, to go down, set the fire, and then leave the basement by the exterior steps.
Okay.
And it's not uncommon for the arsonist to go downstairs, set the fire, and then come out of the burn room and hang out somewhere in the basement as an extra set of eyes.
Watching the students.
Right. So, so they immediately, when they found him, two of the instructor candidates reached in and removed him from the room.
Okay.
A Mayday was initiated.
Okay.
The RIT team.
Everybody has radios.
Right. Everybody was
with
radios.
You have your own radio system there?
No. We work off of portables.
Okay. That's what I mean, though.
Yeah. We have an assigned frequency from the FCC.
Okay.
A Mayday was initiated. The RIT team was sent to side D of the building where the exterior steps would be. The three instructor candidates removed Bob up those steps, and they were met halfway up the steps by the RIT team and took him outside where he was met with the EMS crew.
We're speaking with Commissioner Ed Mann, the State Fire Commissioner from Pennsylvania, discussing the tragic line-of-duty death of Altoona Fire Captain and Pennsylvania Fire Instructor Robert Gilardi. We'll be right back.
Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
This is radio at Firehouse.com Through the Smoke radio program. We have Commissioner Ed Mann from Pennsylvania with us today as a state fire commissioner. And we're continuing listening to his factual description of the events that led to the line-of-duty death of Instructor Robert Gilardi. So, Commissioner, the RIT team met the students who removed Captain Gilardi out, and what happened?
He was was met by EMS when EMS was on the scene. Part of the train. We always have an ambulance service. The local ambulance service, FAME EMS, is always on standby when we're doing resident programs.
Very good.
They were already with their bag, their kit bag, their jump kit.
Because the Mayday had been transmitted.
The Mayday had been transmitted.
Now, when that Mayday was transmitted, did some think it was part of their training?
Well, initially, there was some thought that with some of the instructor candidates that this was part of the scenario, but the full time or the adjunct instructors who were leading the program knew that it was not part of the scenario.
Okay.
Because before any kind of wrinkle is thrown into any of these scenarios, the adjunct instructors, the people who are here are evaluating the instructor candidates, discuss that, and they're all on the same page with one another.
Okay.
So initially there may have been some confusion with the instructor candidates. You know, is this part of our scenario or is this the real deal?
Okay.
It didn't take long for everybody to know that it was the real thing because the evaluators, the adjunct instructors that were here, knew that it was not part of the scenario.
Okay, so fairly quickly, everybody got focused on
The fact that this isn't, you know, this is the real thing.
Right.
The EMS crew was waiting with their jump kit and the litter when Bob was removed from the building. As it turned out, we also had a paramedic who was one of the adjunct instructors that works for Ross Westview EMS in,
right.
in Allegheny County.
Uh-huh.
And we also had an instructor candidate who is a full-time paramedic in Maryland.
Okay.
And they both assisted the BLS crew with patient care. Bob was transported to the Lewistown Hospital and then later flown to the Lehigh Valley Hospital to their burn center. And this is where I guess I begin to personally enter the picture.
Okay, right. So you were, and you mentioned that earlier. So you were, you're involved in the local little league. You're out doing your thing.
Right.
Your pager goes off. Go ahead.
And I had been paged by the state EOC, and after I had walked some distance back to my vehicle, I called them. In the meantime, the county 911 center started to page me on the fire frequency because I'm also an assistant chief here in the county.
Right.
So I knew something was up. So when I called in, they first told me that they were reporting an instructor or an injury of a firefighter at the State Fire Academy and that it was a severe burn. And my first question, in fact, I asked the question several times, are you sure that it occurred at the Fire Academy? Because it was, I've worked here at the Fire Academy as an adjunct and a local level instructor since 1986.
Your thoughts are, how could this happen?
Yeah, it couldn't.
Sure.
I mean, because right. especially knowing that we no longer allowed accelerants to be used in the buildings.
Right.
So, I said, you're sure that this isn't a local level class that was going on someplace else? And they said, no, it occurred at the Fire Academy. So I left the football field. Went to my house, got my vehicle, came to the Fire Academy. I live about 6 miles from the Fire Academy.
Okay.
When I got here, Bob had already been transported. His SCBA had already been secured. The fire grounds themselves had been secured with barrier tape.
Were you a half hour into it at this point?
Yeah, probably. The incident occurred approximately 12:45. It was about 10 minutes after 1 till I got to the Fire Academy.
Okay.
The incident scene had been secured. The apparatus, all the hose lines, everything was left lay where they were.
Okay.
I got here and got initially briefed by some of the staff on what had transpired and what was going on and where Bob was at. Obviously, I had some of my own notifications I had to make. I made some of those notifications. We made sure that the local critical incident stress debriefing team had been alerted.
Okay.
And we knew they were on the way. I had also contacted the president of the Pennsylvania Professional Firefighters Association to make sure that Dave could reach out to the local, the Allentown Fire Department nearby the Lehigh Hospital. So when Vicki Gagliardi and the family got there, they would have someone there to meet them.
Basically function as a liaison.
Exactly.
At the hospital, okay.
I made contact with the fire marshal for the city of Altoona and had some discussions with him with what was going on because we wanted him to accompany Vicki to the Lehigh Valley Hospital.
Okay.
In the meantime, there was a local photographer and the county emergency management coordinator had arrived here on the scene. I had them start taking photographs of the outside of the building where the apparatus was positioned. They videotaped where everything was positioned.
You mentioned something to me when we spoke last week that I thought was just really a positive move on your part. You had all of your students and their instructors call home and call their home fire departments. And I guess that was your thinking that we're going to have to manage the rumor process because you know how firefighters are. The word spreads quicker than you can imagine. So by you having each student there and each instructor there call, at least they knew, their family members knew it wasn't them.
Well, I personally can't take the credit for that occurring.
Okay.
I have pretty sharp staff.
Okay.
And they had already told everybody that has to be done.
That's
you
got to
make a phone call.
Great idea.
And you had indicated earlier there were also some family members here that were watching the training evolutions that
right.
day. So I also placed a telephone call. I knew NIOSH was not going to be open on a Sunday, but I made two phone calls to NIOSH that within the hour of the incident and asked and left messages for them to get back to me first thing Monday morning.
What made you call NIOSH? Why not some other organization? Who has jurisdiction in Pennsylvania?
Well, actually, there really is no state agency that would have any jurisdiction.
So this was now in Pennsylvania. The state fire marshal is the state police.
Correct? Right, and at this time it was an injury. An industrial injury. So there was really no state agency. The other reason I wanted NIOSH is that, you know, those of us involved in the business know that that's what NIOSH was created.
Sure.
For.
Right.
I wanted a third party to be involved with the investigation.
Okay.
For several reasons. First of all, I didn't want anybody 6 months, a year from now, or even weeks afterwards, trying to accuse us of trying to cover something up.
Sure.
I wanted a third-party investigation. The second reason is that I want to be able to take that report from NIOSH when it becomes public, and I want to share it with the world. And that's exactly what we're going to do with the report.
Well, with respect to you the fact that you are able to spend some time talking with all of us today is a big deal. It's clearly a big deal to Pennsylvania firefighters, but to all of us around the country who have been following this event, and our hearts are out to Vicki and the boys and the Altoona Fire Department and your staff at the Academy. What can you tell us so far? I mean, obviously we're only about a month into this. Any idea? I mean, you've already stated that you've made it clear to your staff nobody's going to work alone down there anymore. Anything else that you can share without interfering with the integrity of the investigation?
Well, I guess the coroner has already publicly ruled out any physical health problem.
So that was kind of one of your first thoughts, is God forbid he had a heart attack or something like that.
Did something happen that caused Bob to go down in that burn room that prevented him from leaving the burn room?
Okay.
The coroner has pretty much already publicly ruled out any physical or health-related issue.
Okay.
So, obviously, the focus now turns to protective clothing. Mm-hmm. Something caused Bob to go down in the burn room and prevented him from leaving the room.
Protective clothing or his whole PPE package?
It could have been a combination of those.
From
things.
His gear, in other words, the protective envelope that we refer to is everything from your boots to your SCBA and everything in between. So you're thinking somewhere in there.
Something failed there.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what failed first? It would only be speculation on anybody's part at this point.
Now, what you just said, something failed. Some might think what failed is he was in there, but something failed to protect him to get out.
Exactly.
I mean,
he was in. You know, he went into the room to set the fire. He went, you know, and something caused Bob to collapse within that burn room.
Okay. Something stopped him from getting out.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, again, the coroner has pretty much ruled out any physical or health-related issue. So that doesn't leave a whole lot left to look at.
Right.
I mean,
basically,
you know,
you're looking at equipment or the potential of a flashover.
And
that's me saying that, not you.
Right. You know? And I've had some discussions with one of our recently retired instructors from here at the Academy, who's been here 30 years.
Uh-huh.
And the flashover is probably, in all likelihood, it didn't occur.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
So
basically, in other words, he was down there, and something stopped him, and it just caught fire.
Right, and it prevented him from leaving the
getting
room.
Out.
Okay. I mean, that's now.
Yeah.
Again, you know, if when the coroner rules out any physical ailment,
right,
what's left to look at?
Sure.
So
equipment or conditions. Sure.
Obviously, you know, we're hopeful that NIOSH is going to be able to piece some things together between the protective clothing, the SCBA, the face piece of the SCBA,
Right.
And another thing that I have done is I have contacted some of the SCBA manufacturers, mm-hmm. and I want to work with them to do some testing, because when they test SCBA, for example, they test it till they destroy it. And SCBA that's being used at a training academy is being used and subjected to uses that we're not normally going to see on the streets.
Correct.
And it's not tested in a cycle. In other words, you know, I use this SCBA for 5 or 6 fires in a burn building today. I clean it, I inspect it, I put it away, and 2 weeks from now another instructor comes in, does a pre-operational inspection on that same SCBA, and he wears it for 4 or 5 fires that day.
Uh-huh.
It gets cleaned and gets put away. SCBA is not tested that way.
But it's still taking a beating, though.
Right, and it's, yeah. I think you'll find nationwide that it takes more of a beating in a training environment in burn buildings than it does when you're on the streets at a typical residential
right.
fire.
Right, I mean, your average fire department, you can go to some inner city areas are going to catch obviously more fire. You can go to suburban or rural areas are going to catch less. So the same situation exists, nationwide, but now you go to a burn building and you are going to a working fire every time you operate in a burn building.
And then, you know, the other thing you have to consider is that, you know, if I have a fire in my, you know, a fire in my first due area, I go to the fire, we extinguish the fire, I clean the air pack up and put it away, and it might be weeks before it sees that kind
right,
of fire again.
Right, as opposed to...
To here at the fire academy, this, you know, in any training facility, you're going into a burn building, the building's being heated throughout the course of the day, so now you're dealing with ambient air temperatures and radiant temperatures in that facility, and that instructor may have been in that burn building 4 or 5 times throughout the course of the day.
Right.
And now that same SCBA is going to be cleaned. It's going to be hung up in the SCBA room, and another instructor shows up 2 or 3 weeks later and grabs the same SCBA
right.
and subjects it to that same cycle again.
Right, so it's a much more compressed and accelerated cycle as
right.
opposed
and,
to what and, might be considered normal fire.
And you don't have the same heating and cooling cycles.
Right, right.
So you know, I've contacted the SCBA manufacturers to see if we can get them to lend us a hand to meet with their engineering people, to meet with their scientists, to do some studies, to conduct some tests.
And NIOSH is going to be a part of that as well?
I can almost bet you they'll be part of it.
Great.
I got a phone call from NIOSH on Monday. The incident, Bob's injuries were sustained on Sunday. NIOSH called me Monday morning. Bob died Tuesday. The NIOSH investigator was on his way here on Tuesday.
Yeah, let me comment about that, too. This is, I guess... the NIOSH and the folks running NIOSH right now might be described as this is not your father's NIOSH. They've taken intense interest, always have, but it seems within the last couple of years, probably since the National Fallen Firefighters started the summit, the line of duty to that summit, and then the IFC did the stand down, and many of these things have really taken off in the last couple of years. Another thing that has really taken off is NIOSH's enhanced interest in what firefighters do. They're reaching out a lot more. I expect their reports to be a lot more in-depth in the future. You know, firefighters have said, and I've talked with many who say, the NIOSH reports are all the same. Well, we keep doing some of the same stuff. How many times can they repeat or, you know, a report on the same type of injury? So it creates an interesting situation for all of us to look at and allows NIOSH to really reach out to us and say, here's more facts, more information. And so I'm pumped and anxious about the role that NIOSH has been taking here in the last year or so.
Well, the investigator was here the remainder of that week and left. Last Friday, we brought all of the adjunct instructors who were involved with the training program on October the 25th. We brought them back to the fire academy. We sat down and we talked about where things were with the investigation. We all went to the basement of the burn building and walked through any number of scenarios and, you know, what if this and what if that. And then we actually set some fires in the basement as well.
Okay.
And the NIOSH investigator was here
the entire
Friday,
time.
The entire time.
Right.
So they've been fantastic. You know, a lot of people said to me early on, you know, are you crazy? You brought NIOSH in, they're going to nail you to the wall. I'm not, that's not what NIOSH is all about. They're there to gather facts and report the facts as that as they found them. And if I can use this report to help another training academy somewhere in this country avoid the same ugly circumstance that we had, then I'll take my licks.
Well said, Commissioner. Let's take a break. We'll come back with some final thoughts. You're listening to Through the Smoke. This is radio at firehouse.com. We're listening to Fire Commissioner Ed Mann from Pennsylvania discussing the tragic line-of-duty death of Robert Gilardi.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back with our final segment, Through the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. We're talking today with Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioner Ed Mann regarding the tragic line-of-duty death of Altoona Fire Captain and Pennsylvania Fire Instructor Robert Gilardi. So some final thoughts, Commissioner. I know you wanted to share some comments and some of your ideas regarding CISM, as well as perhaps any other final thoughts you have for our audience.
Well, on the day of the incident, we had the obviously instructor candidates here. We had the adjunct instructors, and there were family members here observing the evolutions that day. When the critical incident stress team came here, and they were here within an hour of the incident, we wouldn't allow anybody to leave here until they were debriefed by one of the teams. And we split everybody into three groups.
It wasn't an option.
It wasn't an option.
Okay.
And the spouses who were here watching were put in one room with a member of this, the critical incident stress debriefing team, the students or the instructor candidates, and then the adjunct instructors and the full-time staff.
Now, the folks observing, the civilian family members observing, so they were close enough to see some of this unfold.
Right. They would have been on the upper deck. Now, they wouldn't have been close enough to see any of the injuries, but obviously
something was wrong.
They knew something was wrong.
Okay, go ahead.
And obviously they had husbands and wives participating in this class.
Of course.
It was important for us to make sure that they had an opportunity to be debriefed.
Okay.
Another thing that we did at the when we were done with the critical incident stress debriefing teams is that we wanted everybody to eat something, and we ordered in a bunch of pizzas. I know it may not be healthy, but it gave everybody an opportunity to gather and kind of vent.
No, that makes sense.
With,
sure.
With pizza and soda,
yep.
And whatnot. There was no alcohol, so I don't want anybody saying, yeah, the commissioner went out and got alcohol and pizza afterwards. There was no alcohol involved. It was soda and pizza.
Okay.
But, again, we gave everybody one more opportunity to be able to you know, vent anything they needed to get out of their system.
So you basically provided a direct means through the counselors and then indirect through the social gathering of everybody
right.
Having a little bit of challenge.
And
that
then,
makes good sense.
We also, throughout the process, some of the staff has stayed in contact with by sending emails. You know, we've told everybody, look, you know, you need to be able to talk to somebody about this if need be. The State Employees Assistance Program is available not only to the adjunct instructors, but the students that were here as well. And we constantly, Pat Pauly from my staff is constantly sending emails out to those people, you know, hey, how you doing?
Right.
As a follow-up.
Follow-up, sure.
Closing comments, Billy, I've said this 100 times, and I'll probably say it 100 more times. Bob's death will not be in vain. We have had other training facilities in Pennsylvania that have already contacted me and have shown me what they've already changed in preparation for their next year's burn season at their own facilities. And if I have to take the NIOSH report and travel across the country to meet with training folks that want to know what went on that day, so it'll change some of the ways that we may be conducting business at training facilities, that's exactly what I'm willing to do. Some people have said to me, you know, it's kind of like a kick in the ass, Commissioner. You know, you guys Pennsylvania jumped on board with the Courage to Be Safe programs, and you're running around the state doing all these programs, and then you have something like this happen at your training facility. Yeah, that hurts. But we're going to continue with the Courage to Be Safe programs, and we're going to take the results and the findings from this NIOSH report, and we're going to learn from it. We already know what some of there's one thing that we already know is going to change, and that's before we have our first fire next year, everybody will understand. One person's setting, one person's watching. And I've told the staff that if I meander into a burn building and I catch the person that's supposed to be watching involved with setting the fire, I'm pulling their credentials right there on the spot.
You got to draw the line. And you mean you and your partner going to the burn building?
Exactly.
Okay. We're listening to and spent some good time here today with Commissioner Ed Mann from Pennsylvania. We appreciate your time. I'd like to invite you back once that report is ready, and perhaps you can share with our listeners some even more preliminary information before the report is sent out so they can hear firsthand from you what has been determined.
Anytime, Billy, and I thank you for the opportunity today.
Well, it's a pleasure, and we appreciate you, and we dedicate this program to the Ghilardi family, Vicki and her three boys, the members of the Altoona Fire Department, and last but certainly not least, the members of the Pennsylvania State Fire Commissioners Fire Academy staff, so that no one moves forward from this day on without remembering what happened to Bob and what could be done for this event to never occur again. This is Billy Goldfeder, your host, Through the Smoke at Firehouse, or radio at firehouse.com. We'll talk to you soon.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.